ruining it for us women, teaching us how to be passive, ditzy, scared little girly girls. And that when a man is rapey, it just means that he likes us. Aww. Here are 5 ways in which Hollywood ruins it for us women. But be warned, movie watching might become a bit less enjoyable.
Hey guys, in this video we're going over 5 very concisely explained reasons that women are making the decisions they are when they take over these media franchises. Now, the criticism that they've been widely getting is that once feminist-minded women take over something, they reorient the entire project over their personal agenda, over making something believable and entertaining for the fans. But she does make some really good points, also a lot of bad ones. We're going to talk about it. Let's jump right into it.
Movies, women ask the questions, men give the answers.
What do we do now?
Smiling.
Once you start noticing this, you cannot unsee it. So many films become seriously cringeworthy once you notice the 3rd or 4th or 5th time the female character asks the male character what they should do next. Like, which way should we go, or what will happen to us, or what was that, or how do we fix this?
Where shall I go, what shall I do?
Or Reese Witherspoon's favorite, what do we do now?
What do we do now?
After all, as she points out, do you know any woman in any crisis situation who has absolutely no idea what to do?
What do we do?
What do we do now?
What do we do?
It often feels like the purpose of the female character in the scene is to point out the problems and the difficulties so that the male character then can show how assertive and clever and active he is. In giving the answer to the woman's question, he also makes sure that we know that he is the leader of the group. What he says goes. And somehow it's like Hollywood thinks that if a man is uncertain or asks for a woman's counsel or opinion, he's no man at all. At the very least, he's not a hero.
All right, so asking questions. This is to establish a romantic relationship between a male and a female in the storyline, the male and female romantic interests. When a woman looks to a guy for answers and leadership, she's signaling to him that she has respect for him and she wants to defer to his leadership. That's a natural dynamic that we see when women find a male to be respectable, dominant, high status, attractive, they defer to his leadership. It's the equivalent of saying when you go to pick up a girl on a date and she says, where do you want to go out to eat? And the guy responds, I don't know, where do you want to go? It establishes the tone for a completely horrible date. Same thing goes for a movie. It's like putting that guy as the lead character in a movie, right? Where we're trying to have some kind of romantic thing with action hero, all that stuff. It also ignores the fact that a ton of these movies also have other guys that the woman disrespects, degrades, and humiliates or ignores to establish more status for the character that she has respect and romantic interest in. So she looks to him for leadership and she disrespects the other guy. So that's the first one. Second one?
Like half of the time, a caretaker of some sort. She's either a nurse or a teacher or a kindergarten teacher or in some cases a doctor if they're trying to be woke. Of course there's nothing wrong with having a caretaking kind of job, but it becomes a bit warped when the caretaker female is so incredibly overrepresented in female movie characters. And it's a sign that it's still considered a desirable trait for a romantic female character to be caring, soft and sensitive, considerate and all those other traditionally female traits.
All right, so nurturing characteristics. Men are naturally attracted to behavior that is nurturing, feminine, and caring because it indicates a woman that is potentially going to have good mothering instincts. So it makes sense if you're trying to establish a believable romantic connection within a 2-hour movie that you polarize feminine and masculine characteristics. So you have a believable romance, meaning she's nurturing, caring, feminine, a nurse or a caregiver versus a heroic, masculine, high status, decisive man, right? Let's see what else she has to say.
Male will probably come as no surprise, the female who's being pursued. Basically, in script writing, the love interest of a film is usually there to be won as a prize by the end of the film. The guy has to solve problems, gain some personal growth, and overcome some obstacles, and if he does this, he wins the girl. That in itself is not a bad thing. In some movies, it's the girl who wins the guy, or a girl who wins another girl, and there are ways to do this that don't feel creepy. Sadly though, Hollywood does tend to do it the creepy way, portraying main character guys who are basically pickup artists and then calling it romance. The love interest in a movie is often hunted down or stalked or nagged into dating our hero. Let's look, for example, at one of the most sexist films ever made, Love Actually. Do you remember when the Walking Dead guy shows up at Keira Knightley's house like a total stalker with handwritten cardboard signs expressing his completely stalky, never dying love for her? He also shows her a creepy video he's made of her without her knowledge. Oh, and we're supposed to feel for him and root for him, and poor Keira Knightley has to act like she's totally into this stalker shit.
100% right here, and this is where the whole blue pill thing comes from, where we promoted this idea where men had to do these grand gestures in order to win the favor of women. And what actually happens is that it indicates a fear of loss and a scarcity mindset, which are beta male characteristics that women are repulsed by. So back in the 80s, they were showing guys videos where if a girl dumps you, you show up on her lawn with a radio. What she actually does is call the cops or her other guy when the guy does these crazy things to show how much he cares about her, how fearful he is to lose her. So that is a creepy-ish stalker thing that we are seeing less of. So she's right. But let's take a look at what else she has to say.
Another crazily sexist movie, The Notebook. Oh, you know the scene, Ryan Gosling coercing Rachel McAdams to go on a date with him because otherwise, yep, he'll commit suicide by jumping off a Ferris wheel. Real catch, that Gosling. It's also fun to trick women into dating men, like in 10 Things I Hate About You, where Heath Ledger's character acts like he's interested in Julia Stiles' character and hobbies and stuff to get her to date him, and later nagging her to date him, although she's already turned him down, by publicly singing to her at their school stadium, putting her in a real uncomfy situation.
Okay, so this is the more interesting thing of the two. So these are actually designed to appeal to women, and women love these movies. And what's the difference between that creepy stalkerish stuff and this stuff is that these are alpha male versus beta male behaviors. So the beta male scarcity mindset is when a girl gets mad at him, he goes throws himself on the rug, and he's, you know, the 80s culture music, baby come back type, all the beta male songs, all the beta male movies, where it's a fear of loss and a scarcity mindset, the blue pill stuff, right? Why this stuff doesn't apply is because these are alpha things to do. So if you go out in the club, you go hit on the hottest girl in the room, if she doesn't take it, she rejects you, you just roll on to the next one. You don't have any of this insecurity stuff or freak out or whatever. But more than likely, if you have the confidence to do that, it establishes you as a high status guy in the room, and you can be alpha in different types of scenarios by doing that type of thing. So I'm going to tie this to a quirky little theory in evolutionary psychology, since you guys like that stuff. And that is, tons of different mammals, when the male and the female are mating, the female will make tons of noise, and people theorize that that's to let the other males in the species in the area know that they're mating, so that the male that has the confidence to do it has to be confident enough to fight off all the other guys that might come and try to stop him. So people have theorized that people, the reason why women are so vocal when they hook up, is because that's a throwback to making a ton of noise so that the guy would have to fight off all the other primates that might try to stop him. So why that applies to these behaviors, the dude singing in the stadium that's trying to win over the favor of the female, the woman, is that he's not afraid of letting everybody know. Any guy can challenge him. That's how much he wants this girl. So it makes the woman feel desirable. So women love to feel desired. So when guys take social risks, meaning, and then the other one, the Ferris wheel thing, he goes and hits on her when she's with another guy. So he doesn't care about that other guy. He's not concerned at all. It's alpha male behavior if that guy tries to attack him. So that elicits sexual attraction, both of these things, because it indicates I'm willing to take on any girl, any guy that tries to stop me from winning over this girl, right? And the toxic behavior would actually be if he got all mad and weird if when she got rejected, right? But they don't do that, and that's why these types of behaviors work. Okay, let's keep going.
Here's another weird thing the movie industry loves to do. Women characters that are born sexy yesterday, a term coined by pop culture detective that I just mentioned. If there's a capable, powerful, agile, skilled woman, and especially if she's physically stronger or better at fighting than the male character, she often seems to be made into a grown human woman child. Take Wonder Woman, for example. Finally, we get a female superhero movie, and what happens? They make her into a childish, naive, completely new to the world, without a clue about anything woman. She can kick ass, sure, but she needs a man to tie her shoelaces. Oh, and don't forget, she also needs to be sexy for some reason. Another good example of this is Mila Jovovich's character in The Fifth Element, who is both kick-ass, childishly clueless, and strangely sexy all at once.
All right, she's also right again. And the reason why we make these women, these super powerful characters, ultra feminine and vulnerable is so that they can actually have a believable romantic interest with a vastly less powerful male character. Because if a woman is infallible and vastly more powerful than a guy, the romance doesn't work. It's the equivalent of a lawyer, female lawyer, woman making 250 grand a year dating the gas station clerk. She can't respect the guy. She treats him like dirt, and there's no sexual attraction between the man and the woman. This is not how it is for men who can be the lawyer, but he'll date the barista from Starbucks and he loves her, right? That's because women are designed to constantly want to get the bigger, better deal, get guys that are higher status than they are so they can move up socially, right? The problem with not doing this is what we ran into in the last 10 years. We come out of the box ultra powerful and infallible. We can't have a functional romantic interest with a character like that. Also, they've tried all these tricks to establish status quickly that don't work. Namely, they degrade and denigrate the male characters around them. So in the same franchise, we can see two examples of this. Rey from Star Wars and what's super popular right now, Ahsoka Tano from Star Wars. Both characters are ultra powerful, dominant characters in the franchise now. But with Ahsoka Tano, they grew her from a very feminine character when she was a Padawan, and over years developed her into this ultra powerful character that the fans have a lot of respect and they just love her, right? Other classical examples of this would be Sarah Connor and Ripley from Alien, who started out as believable characters and through circumstances, they grew them into these powerful, dominant characters. But the same tricks to establish the high-status guy, a high-status male character, have not really worked so far with female characters. And it kind of comes off, men and women don't really like it. So that's what the whole Mary Sue thing is about. So, all right, next one.
Hollywood also loves to portray women as headless chicken, almost literally. The number of times I've been put off a movie because they introduce a female character with her ass. No face, not even a head, just a big close-up of a bum. Many times, lesser female characters, like extras or small roles, never show their face at all. She's just there to be a body. Imagine all the strip club scenes you've seen in movies, and by God, there are many of them. How often aren't the strippers' bodies in shot with their head out of frame? And don't get me started on movie posters. Apparently, we don't need to see a woman's head to want to go buy cinema tickets. There's even a website just dedicated to this called headlesswomenofhollywood.com. I love that name. Here's what they say about this type of objectification of female body parts in movies. The consistent fragmentation of women's bodies with particular focus on the boobs, butt, and lips separates the sexualized female body parts from her wholeness. Thus, as fragmented parts, the viewer does not have to morally reconcile the woman who is being objectified with her complete humanness.
All right, I don't actually even have an opinion on this. Men do this. Let me know what you think. I don't know if it's something that we care to even keep or if there's a problem with it, but I thought she did a good job of articulating this stuff for us. And, you know, in order to make movies that are actually going to work in this type of environment that don't suck, people are going to have to think about this stuff in order to do it so that they don't train wreck all these franchises, right? So let me know what you guys think.